that doesn't work.
The left side of what?
It's one lit up.
Yeah.
And if you press this, it just darkens it, and the next time he presses it, it lights up again only on that side. We'll fix that on the 20th.
So I'm not going to worry about. I'll just look at the 1, 2, 3, and 4s.
Exactly.
All right.
Okay, gentlemen, ready to start?
Yeah.
And Tom, I guess just us three are going to move down, and those guys are going to stay the same. So you just move over one. Ray will move over one, and I'll move that one.
I can handle that.
You can handle that.
I can handle that.
Let's see, did he say move right or left?
That's right.
Please stand and join us for the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning and welcome to the first Board of Supervisors meeting in Stanislaus County in the year 2006. I have one official duty left as chair, and that is to oversee the election of the chairman and vice chairman for the Board of Supervisors for 2006. I'll entertain a motion for a nomination for chairman.
Nominate Ray Simon.
And I would nominate Tom Mayfield as vice chair.
Okay. So we have a, can we do that in one motion, County Council?
I'll make that motion to elect Ray Simon as chairman and Tom Mayfield as vice chairman.
Okay. Thank you. And is there a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It's unanimous. And why don't we make those moves, and then we'll continue under Chairman Simon.
Have a new sound system, so this is going to look a little peculiar for a while. I've got to get used to operating it. I wish to thank the board for the confidence that they've expressed in me and my service to them as a chair of the board. And my first action is to present to you, Jeff. This on? There we go. Is that on? Token of the board's appreciation for your year's superb service as chair of the board. You led the board in all of the major issues that we took on last year. You were thoughtful. You were very selective in how you approached issues. And even more importantly, you were very kind and considerate of the audience and the people who came to talk before the board, as well as to board members. So in our appreciation, we'd like to present this to you.
Thank you.
We'd like to say a couple of words.
I think probably everyone's heard from me enough. Just want to say thank you. I enjoyed the year a whole lot and am greatly looking forward to this year. Thank you, Ray. Okay.
You're welcome. Okay, we turn now to Item 3, approval of annual progress report for the mentoring program.
Good morning, Chairman Simon, members of the board. Keith Boggs, Deputy Executive Officer, Chief Executive Office. Thank you very much for your quick consideration of this item this morning. We want to get this fellow back into school. I'm here to present the annual report on the Employee Mentor Program, a program that has just completed its seventh year. This kind of public sector sustainability, certainly in the mentor arena, is simply unheard of. And as I've said many times in the past, this is a testimonial to the caliber and commitment of our Stanislaus County employees and our site coordinators, several of which who are here this morning in support of the initiative. And I would like to publicly recognize their hard work, if they would stand. Some of the site coordinators that are here today, thank you very much. Joining me this morning is Debbie Vaughn from Everett School and a very special guest that she'll introduce momentarily. Before I introduce Ms. Vaughn, I would like to point out several program highlights and milestones that have been achieved through 2005. First, 10,453 mentoring hours have been recorded to date. These are personal, non-work hours at lunch, after work, in the evening, and on weekends. 12 county departments actively participated in 2005. The Department of Child Support Services had the highest employee participation rate at 19 mentors and registered over 300 mentor hours. I'd also like to add that on January 26, at the Harvest Hall from 5:30 to 7 p.m., we'll have our 7th annual Employee Mentor Recognition Dinner. At this affair, we identify and recognize the Employee Mentor of the Year, voted by employee peers, and our Site Coordinator of the Year. Very low-key celebration, lots of children, parents, employees, and mentor network affiliates, and I would like to formally invite each and every one of you to attend this year's celebration. And finally, January is National Mentor Awareness Month. In keeping with that distinction, we are requesting this morning that you consider a proclamation acknowledging the month of January 2006 as Mentor Awareness Month here in Stanislaus County. At this point, I'd like to introduce Debbie Vaughn. Debbie is a reading specialist from Everett School, one of our mentoring sites. Ms. Vaughn continues to be instrumental in developing and sustaining this uncanny mentor interest and interest in youth development in our community. Debbie, perhaps you could share with the board what our mentor program means to Everett School and to the children there, and maybe you can introduce our special guest. Okay.
Well, good morning. It's a privilege to be here. As Keith said, the program has been at our site for 7 years now. And when it first started, we had no idea what the impact would be for our little elementary school in the middle of town. And to date now, we have probably serviced between 55 and 60 children have been affected over the last 7 years by people here in Stanislaus County who just have a heart for children and want to make a difference. And so we appreciate all the efforts, and we appreciate your support in the program that Keith and Lisa have brought to our school. The difference, I think the biggest difference I've noticed for children is they have that one or two more adults in their lives that are good role models. They have one or two more reasons to be at school every day. And their self-esteem just rises. Their absenteeism from school goes down. And above all that, there's some actual academic learning that goes on. And so we're just so privileged to have such a program. And to know that it's sustained for 7 years is just incredible. I never knew when we first started that it would have such an impact. And this morning I brought Jason, and he is one of the children who have been impacted by these mentors. And his mentor, he asked Keith, and I try to apologize for that every once in a while, Jason. Keith is one of his mentors. He has three this year. And so he would like to share a little bit this morning.
Thank you, Ms. Debbie Vaughn. I would like to say a speech right now for the mentors I have, and they're really nice. It is really nice having a mentor. They help me a lot. They help me with reading like John, because he makes me read. With the mentors, I get to review a lot of stuff, like things in my science book. We have been studying cells. Before we did microscopes in class, I read and learned about cells with Keith. Then when I looked in the microscopes at class, it looked just like what I read with Keith. Raul is really fun to have too, as a mentor too. He's helping me read a book called Strider right now. I just like having a chance to relax with my mentors, Right before Christmas, we didn't even read. We just sat and talked. It was really nice. Thank you.
I'm going to have him just make all my presentations from now on. What do you think,
Sounds Supervisor good to me. Simon?
Any questions? Thank you so much for taking the time early.
Okay, well, thank you, Keith and Debbie. Thank you so very much for all of the effort that you've put into this program. And thank you for bringing Jason along this morning. I know it's tough for someone his age to come before a body like this in front of a lot of adults, and it sounds to me like your mentors have done an awfully good job, Jason, and you read that extremely well. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, next we have a presentation from Ken Patterson.
Did this last one need an approval, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, it would need a vote.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I believe we were supposed to approve.
Right.
That being so, I'll move for approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So ordered. I have to ask a question. This machine is not operating well up here. Bill, did you make?
No.
Okay. All right.
You cleared off.
I can't clear these off anymore, I don't think. There, just that one. Thank you. Sorry.
Yeah, not a problem. Good morning, Chairman Simon, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Krosnick, Ken Patterson, Director of the Community Services Agency. I'd like to thank you for taking time today to participate in Family Services Specialist Recognition Week. And a couple of people that I want to introduce is Lydia Toledo, who has been my assistant director over the StanWorks division in Community Service Agency, is retiring on the 1st of November. And I'd like to introduce to you Kathy Harwell, who has been selected as Lydia's replacement. Kathy comes to us with 15 years of management experience in Community Services Agency. She's also been loaned out to state offices a couple of times to do some special projects and really has distinguished herself. And we're pleased for Lydia to be able to go to retirement. We're pleased to have a real seasoned employee like Kathy come in and be her successor. And I'd also like to introduce Barbara Willard, who's prepared this PowerPoint for us today. So if we're ready, Barbara. Okay. And we're ready for the next slide here. About 25% of all Stanislaus County's families receive, okay, we're all getting used to this new system. 25% of Stanislaus County's families receive some type of service through the Community Services Agency. We know that many families suffer from multiple barriers to their self-sufficiency. Some of those things are poverty, domestic violence, substance abuse, mental health issues, homelessness, etc. And family service specialists really are our key staff person in assisting with interventions in many of those things. We offer programs throughout the county. In addition to our principal office on Hackett Road, we offer services in Turlock, West Modesto, Houston, at the Health Services Agency location on Scenic Avenue in West Modesto, and then certainly we are started now in Riverbank and look forward to giving you a broader plan about Riverbank expansion sometime in the spring.
Our family service specialist primary responsibility is assisting families and individuals. They provide eligibility and employment services to families and individuals who are applying for and receiving CalWORKs, which is temporary assistance to families, needy families, food stamps program, to the Medi-Cal program, welfare to work, foster care, and general assistance. We have family services specialists in all three divisions at CSA, including the StanWorks division, Children and Families Division, and our Adult Services Division. The total number of staff who hold the title of Family Services Specialist at CSA is 361. In addition, there are other departments within the county that have Family Service Specialists. Some of those departments include the Department of Employment and Training and also Health Services Agency. All of the Family Service Specialists at CSA utilize the C4 Welfare Information System, and I think you heard quite a bit about C4 in the past. Next slide. The job responsibilities of our Family Services Specialists include providing case management services for all the programs that we talked about in the last slide. In addition, they write policy and procedure handbooks. They administer training and review casework. The policy and procedures that they review come from legislation. They also review policy decisions from the state and federal government and policy changes. They conduct special investigations and quality control reviews, as well as coordinating special projects. And they collaborate with community-based organizations. For our customers, the very first person that they see is the family services specialist as they're coming in to receive benefits and services to meet their needs. the very last person as a customer is leaving our services and becoming self-sufficient is the family services specialist.
I'd like to concentrate on some of the accomplishments that the family service specialists have achieved in this last year. They've assisted 2,365 employees, customers, to enter employment. They processed benefits for over 100,000 county residents, and the numbers of those benefits are pretty, they're large. They're $41.8 million in food stamps, and then another $59.9 million in temporary cash assistance. In addition to that, they've served an average of 1,400 families per month with child care services, and while they've been doing this, they've achieved one of the best food stamp accuracy rates in the state. Then the other thing they do is make people eligible for the Medi-Cal program. There's lots of ways of measuring this, but a conservative estimate of the provider benefits then that come to this community through the Medi-Cal vendors that where our customers use their Medi-Cal card is $262 million. It's likely much higher than that, but it's a figure that we were pretty solid about. Another thing that we don't have here is many of our customers come to us with learning disabilities, and they have to be tested and evaluated, and interventions have to be planned with them so that they can work around those learning disabilities and enter employment. And our learning disabilities team was honored by MJC this last year with the Disabilities Act Committee for treating all people with dignity and respect and equality, irrespective of their disability. So we appreciated that outside recognition.
Additional accomplishments include the recalculation of benefits with a savings of $751,275 to Stanislaus County. And that's based upon our review of, in our special investigations unit review of fraud, and based upon denial, discontinuance, or reduction of the benefits, there was significant savings to the county. We provide integrated services to families in the CalWORKS Welfare to Work program and child welfare services. We also have the voluntary family maintenance and families in partnership. One of the things that we're proud of in our integrated services is our First Step program, and that's an example of integrated casework between the welfare to work family services specialists and our child welfare social workers. In this program, the families come through our child welfare services program and are identified to have significant needs in the area of alcohol and drug addiction. And treatment is provided at First Step, and coordination is planned with the family services specialists to provide those customers with benefits that they so need, cash assistance, food stamps, and Medi-Cal. And it provides for them a transition to the future and being successful in gaining employment later. Stanislaus County is also known as a pioneer county and is showcased as a model for other California counties. Several of our programs that we've administered in Stanislaus County have been published nationwide, and we've had visitors from many different counties and many different states to come and determine what we're doing, how we do our programs, so that they can model what we're doing in their states.
One of the reasons I think that our family service specialists excel is that on their own time they have formed a chapter of the National Eligibility Workers Association, or NEW, and that nationwide organization is just founded and exists to promote professionalism, personal growth, and lifelong learning. And so our family services specialists really do see the job as more than just what they do during their work week. They think about innovative ways to assist customers and to run an efficient operation. And on that point of professionalism, they did one thing for me this past year that I was really grateful for. We saw that maybe people were getting a little too casual in their dress, in their attire of coming to work. We talked to the NEW organization about it, and they came up with a very innovative way of doing this. They created a CSA fashion show called Dressing Fine on a Dime, and we carved off an afternoon where people would come in, watch this fashion show of what to wear to work and what not to wear to work. It was a very subtle way of communicating professional attire and professional dress as appropriate, and I really want to thank NEW for that. And the last slide, our family services specialists certainly support the CSA mission, which is to build a stronger community. CSA works with the people of Stanislaus County to help with a safe place to live, access to food, health care, and opportunities to work. And their motto is, personally they care and professionally they serve. To receive the proclamation today for this Family Services Specialist Week is Lori Gray. Lori is a Family Services Specialist from our Turlock office, and she's the president of the Stanislaus chapter of NU. And while Lori's coming up, I'll just also say the other officers are Kathy Lindsay, who's the vice president, Jennifer Krause is the secretary, and Jennifer Silvera is the treasurer of our new organization. Thank you for taking some time to have this presentation this morning. Lori?
Thank you. She's going to receive the... Turn this on. Lori, how are you this morning?
Very well, thank you.
Good. Everything that's been said in front of you on the screen is written in this document, so it would be really redundant for me to go over it again. But this is a resolution, a document to be provided you and your department and everyone in it, our appreciation for all of the progress that you've made over this last, more than a year, a long haul. And the thing that I think that impresses me the most about all this in terms of not only the service, but how this accuracy rate can be so high and to be one of the highest, if not the highest, in the state. And you've consistently done that. So it's not just an abnormality for 1 year. I'm also grateful, Lydia, that you've introduced a dress code. I had this problem in my own business at one time, and everyone seemed to be dressing down all the time, so we finally got them dressed up, and everybody looks great. Anyway. I want to present this resolution to you and ask you if you have a few words you would like to say.
Well, actually we've changed our name the beginning of January. As the president of the Stanislaus County chapter of the National Eligibility Workers Professionals Associated through Human Services, I proudly accept this proclamation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, we have the. There's no more under this presentation, is there? There's another one here. Okay, we have a court-appointed special advocates CASA program, Christine Barrera.
Good morning, gentlemen. My name is actually Christine Keel, and I am the executive director for CASA, which is court-appointed special advocates.
And my name is Maria Mariscal. I'm the case manager for CASA of Stanislaus County. Good morning.
We are here today mostly to say thank you, not only for having us here this morning, but we thank you very much for supporting our program. You've provided an office space for us, and we are very grateful, and we want to keep it. And I'm also have to apologize that nobody's been here so far to tell you where we've been, what we're doing, and where we're going, and how we're going to get there. I myself am new to the program since June, and I have a lot of visions for the program, and I want CASA to be everything it's meant to be. And I know that will happen now that I have my wonderful case manager, Maria. We do actually have a mission. I'm not going to read it word for word because I think just reading it would minimize what our goals are. We have some wonderful children out there whose voice has been taken away by the people who should have been providing them with a voice and loving them and caring them the most. So we are talking about the worst of the worst, severe abuse and neglect cases of children who are already out of their home, and we are going to advocate for permanent placement for these wonderful children. And we're going to do that by having fantastic advocates, and we're going to provide them with excellent training and we're going to increase how many advocates that we have so we can serve more children. Unfortunately, there's over 1,000 children who could probably benefit from an advocate, and we aren't serving anywhere near that. And I'm not okay with that. A little bit of history. We, in 1976, luckily, there was a wonderful judge out there who said, looked around, saw a cute little guy sitting in a chair probably much like these, whose feet don't touch the floor, looking around at the ceiling, all these people talking about him, deciding where he's going to go, how he's going to get there. Nobody asked him what he thought. So we were fortunate enough to have a judge to say, you know what, we need an advocate program. So we now have National CASA, we have California CASA, and the goal is to have a CASA in every county. California is doing a good job of that because we have 40 with a couple more pursuing funding to start up. I'm also proud to say that with all the changes that this county's CASA has gone through and how small we are right now, and it's not going to stay that way, that we are also seen by National and California CASA as a model to other CASAs. So take pride in knowing that we're on a good start. However, Marie and I are rebuilding. We want people to know who we are, and we're going, you have not seen or heard the last of me, so be ready. Marie has some information for you regarding our advocates and our advocate program and what we are going to do to change all that.
I'll begin with the role of our advocates, and that includes they provide the Stanislaus County Commissioner with insight into a child and his or her circumstances so the court can better assess what the child's best interests. CASA volunteers do more than provide the court with information. They also find themselves advocating in forums other than the court, such as doctor's offices, social service agencies, schools, and families. Often, CASA volunteers are the most consistent adults in the children's lives. And that also includes they volunteer for the Superior Court judges to speak in the best interest of the children who are brought before the court for reasons of abuse or neglect. A CASA is an official part of the judicial proceedings, working alongside attorneys and social workers by handling only two or three cases at a time. The CASA has the time to thoroughly explore the history of each assigned case. And since 2003, we have served 67 children. There has been 26 sworn advocates since August of 2003. Currently, there's 11 advocates assigned to a case serving 23 children. And the outcome of these cases includes adoption, guardianship, long-term permanency, or transfer out of county, meaning the case is transferred to a different local CASA. And our objective is to increase the children that we're currently serving, to increase the number of advocates, and to achieve greater diversity. 18 hours a week. They spend time with the children either by visiting the foster home, the group home, or they go to court and speak up for these children. And this is one of our previous volunteers who has resigned from the program and completed a case. She served two children, and she currently is still helping CASA by recruiting people. And here are the following are our advocates: Nicole Bolson, Angie Cherry, Deborah Quello, Robert Gleason, Linda Gray, Mark Hartley, Adie Hawkins, Adelina Hawkins, Alicia James, Cynthia Julesgaard, Donna Jean Cabela, Cynthia Lofton, Carol Perry, Jerry Ryan, Blanca Rivera, and Joanne Wallace. Without these individuals, our program would not be where it is now. As mentioned earlier, these volunteers are required to commit themselves to the program. And it's from 1 year to 18 months. Sometimes the cases don't close until even 2 years. We have one of our volunteers who was assigned to 7 children, and now he's down to 2 children. He's been assisting this family for almost 2 years already, so it is a lot of responsibility these individuals take. Our next recruitment, we are accepting applications right now, and the next training will begin in February. The training is conducted at our CASA office, which is at 801 11th Street downtown. And if anyone is interested in becoming a volunteer, you could reach Christine or myself.
All right, Maria is going to get those advocate numbers up, and we have some great ideas on recruiting. However, this is my area, the financial support. Right now, we have grants through AOC, the Judicial Council, Office of Emergency Services, and thank you very much to Community Services Agency for continuing to support us. We have foundation grants and service clubs, but that's not cutting it. And I welcome any expertise and knowledge in building up these areas. My goal is from my board to form a grant committee, to form a fundraising committee, and to form a PR committee. And that includes building up our board. So we are in a rebuild, growing, and improvement stage. And I welcome any expertise and willingness to continue to help us to grow. And again, we thank you very much for your support. And we're going to make CASA everything that it was meant to be. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for the presentation. I know the quality and quantity of the work that you do, in the sense that the board has been aware of CASA since its inception. And I think annually Marla Arata calls on me and makes the pitch for something. She's a real advocate of your group. So we appreciate it and appreciate you bringing this information to us. Hopefully it got out to the public through the television that we have in our board meetings, and you'll get calls.
Awesome.
I hope that occurs, because it's certainly a worthy project.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks again.
Next, we have the public comment period. This is reserved section for those who wish to comment on items that are not on the board agenda. However, there are two people who have given me slips that want to talk on correspondence item 4, and rather than making you wait all the way to the end of the board meeting, which is where it is, I'll ask if you wish to speak now, and I would tell you that you're limited at this time to 5-minute presentation each, and if I have to remind you, you'll understand. So I'll call first on the William Haynes, and I think he may have left the room. Okay. Then Donna Cecilini. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and I promise I won't take 5 minutes, because it won't take that long. My name is Donna Cecilini. I'm a member of Mid Valley Water Ski Club. I have belonged there since 2000, and I have been a coach for a junior development team a couple years ago, and broke away from that group, and I do teach other kids in my neighborhood to water ski. And last year, this club got kind of out of hand, and they took 4 days a week instead of 2, and then they, so we were not allowed to ski out there. And the way they plan their junior development team is they have it on Tuesday and Thursday, which breaks up the use of the course, so people can't camp back there. All I'm asking for, and all of us are asking for, is to be able to rotate in and to share this part of the lake. And they claim it's a safety issue, but they ran it without exclusive use 2 days a week last year, and with exclusive use 2 days a week for a total of 4, and it wasn't a safety issue then. In their letter, they talk about confrontations, but unfortunately the only confrontations that have ever been are from the person that has wrote this letter. He's been involved in all of them, in fact, in pushing people off the dock. So to let you know that those confrontations are from this gentleman. it is an issue of money. This person is being paid $100 a day from Mastercraft to be out there with his boat to pull kids. And so he has a fiduciary reason to want to keep this club to keep this junior development going. I'm not against the junior development team. In fact, I think it can be run as other clubs run it, where we have coaches come out, professional coaches come out, and we give lessons. And then practice time is open to all kids, and that all kids can be belong to this. He has chosen a select group of kids, not allowing any more into this group. So he keeps just 12 to 15 kids year after year, and no other kids can join this, my grandson included, his friends, and things like that. So they have kept this portion of the lake to themselves. The coaches also ski, where they said in their letter, they state that it's like a soccer field. Well, soccer coaches don't go out and play soccer with the kids. It's not like soccer. This isn't a soccer field. It's a lake where all of us would like to enjoy it. And I'm just asking that we please keep it a public site, that it is only for practice, and if they want to have it for professional coaches, then we're more than willing to say that's great for tournaments, disabled, PAL, all those things that the club does. Those things are important. But this is not a community service. It's a profit-making club for one person, and I'd just like the board to know that. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna. Mr. Haynes, you have an opportunity to speak for 5 minutes.
Yeah, and I guess my timing was impeccable. I jotted down just a few things last night, so if I'm jumping around, I apologize for the not being in an orderly manner. This program is really not needed for these youths to come out and enjoy learning to ski and wakeboard. I, my daughters, and many others who have joined the club in the past did not know how to ski the course until we joined the club. There are always willing coaches within the club to teach and help others to learn. That is the reason for joining the club. This separate group is strictly a business venture being ran on a public facility. This is not volunteers who, as they say, donate their time, equipment, boats, and everything. These people are compensated. Unlike there are club members who, for disabled clinics, police athletics league days, tournaments, they do come out there and they're not compensated. You just show up and you help the members who want to come out there and learn to ski. So that is a necessity of charging extra in addition to the usual fees to become a member of the club. As simple club members, you pay a fixed amount to be pulled through the course and then are coached on improving. This is how all of us get better, young and old alike. We hold these events once or twice a week anyway, and this could be accomplished in the same manner for all of these kids. Not the parents having to pay a much larger fee so that they're able to drop their kids off in the morning and returning in the afternoon to pick them up. Other club members really do donate their time and equipment for no charge to the children that they bring. Why should these children be barred from enjoying a public facility just because a few people want to run a small business on this site? What would prevent me or other people from starting up any other type of program and want to cordon off part of a public body of water for our own purpose? You know, this is similar to encounters that I've had before with duck hunters who they pay good money to set their duck blinds up during the season, and they're not restricting other people from coming out, although you're freezing when you're out there in the wintertime skiing, but they're not restricting anyone from coming out there to ski. They share, and the duck hunters and I worked out a good arrangement one year when it wasn't an issue when we were showing up at the same time. We share. This JDT team is really not a regimented training facility. It's not like they're out there trying to get these people ready for the Olympics or some type of major competition. It really is a good time, and I say that because I agree with this premise of this program. But it's a good time. It gives these children something to do. And as a matter of fact, I've told these people many times, if you want to be out there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, I'm all for it. I don't think there should be any restrictions on the limit of people coming out there and doing this. By this group's own admission, in the past 2 years, they've only been interrupted on this site twice. And as their letters to you, to the board members stated, the site mostly sits vacant and unused during the day. I would imagine that the gate receipts for that time period would show the very small number of people who even pass through the entrance gates during midweek. So as I've stated many times, this idea of being interrupted and having dangerous people on the site is almost non-existent. But with the public knowing that this is a public body of water, how would this scenario play out? Let's say a family takes a day of work off for a vacation, drives to the lake pulling their boat, they pay their entrance fee at the gate, and come back to the ski course. Now what? Are these people to be told, you need to go elsewhere, there's plenty of lakes nearby? I wouldn't think that's a good lesson to teach these kids who are on this JDT team. Share. This is kind of a similar scenario to my tournament bass fishing days. You know, I paid rather large entry fees to fish these tournaments on public waters. My draw partners for the day sometimes try to intimidate people off of their fishing spot. I found myself on many occasions having to defend the people on the water. The spot was no more ours than the people who were enjoying the water also. Should the bass clubs be allowed to be granted exclusive use for the days they fish on the lake so that they can find all the spots they located fish prior to the tournament?
Mr. You're close to winding up. You have 5 minutes
yes.
only. I hope you understand that.
And then there's the flip side of this. Many people, you know, have said that there's private schools and private places you could go. Well, these places are run as a business, and you can do that. Then you're free to run the limit, any amount of people you want to go to these sites. Another issue is time. I have a DVD with me that would show you if anyone does show up on this particular day, it's like a 6 minute pass of skiing. So there's very limited time that these people would be interrupted. Past practice has demonstrated that running the event for 4 days per week and only having exclusive use for two of these days has not been an issue, and in the future I do not see it being an issue. And as far as many people have been saying that, you know, this is an income producer for Stanislaus County, which it is, because a lot of these parents also buy permits for their boats and vehicles to pull them there. Well, a lot of the same people in the club have paid for their annual permits for their boats and vehicles. Why should these people be said, well, on these days you can pull your boat up to Maloney's or Don Pedro? I just see it, the overall issue is this is a public site. It is a known public site, and it would be unfortunate for anyone to be told, you know, you can go elsewhere on these few days if, in fact, this event were ever to take place, which it hasn't. So thanks for your time.
Thank you. I have one more, Laura. Laura, I guess it is. Link.
Hello. Thank you for letting us speak today. I am not a member of the club. However, I am a concerned community and taxpayer member. I am a water skier, though, and I do enjoy going to Modesto Reservoir, skiing on the course, skiing other places in the lake, and I do have a family. I have children. My children have friends. I enjoy bringing them out in the summertime when they're not in school. It gives us a family event to do during the school day. The number of days that this water ski JDT team is requesting is a large portion of days. It's not just a weekend. It's not just 1 week or 3 days out of a week. This is a major portion of the summer, and I don't believe that it is right to take away a taxpayer's privilege to not be able to even rotate in. I don't mind at all that they're out there. I think it's great that they have a JDT team. But I don't think that exclusive use is the proper way of running this event. Rotation is generally the way when you go to a ski course on any ski site, whether it's a private ski site or a public ski site. Rotation in when new people show up is the customary way of having something done. And as one of the other, as Mr. Haynes just mentioned, it only takes 6 minutes to rotate a person in, which isn't a large amount of time. I also agree that it would be a shame if I drove half hour out of my way, which is what it takes to get from my house to get over there, find out that I paid my entry fee, I'm towing my boat, paid the fee for my boat as well as my car, and then find out, oh, I'm not allowed to participate in the activity that I was planning on coming for, and I already took the day off work, or, you know, had my family arrange to come with their friends, and now our vacation is out of the water, you could say, so to speak. So anyway, I would just really like to reiterate that I don't think exclusive use for that length of period is a fair time for any group to be out there. Also, another comment I'd like to make, I am very familiar with ski clinics and ski clubs and junior teams. Most of these groups across the nation only function for one weekend or maybe 3 days, 4 days, maximum. I've never heard of any other team that rehearses, or not rehearses, but that goes with practices for a full duration of the summer, especially requesting exclusive time. Everything I've heard of, it's always rotation in with public. Anyway, thank you.
Okay, thank you. The way this item will be handled is that your comments and any information you have other than that to provide the clerk will be given under that correspondence item to the Chief Executive Office and the County Council and Parks and Recreation Department, and we'll ask that they get back to you with whatever resolution there may be to this issue. Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience is here to speak on any item that's not on the agenda? If not, then we'll turn to the consent calendar.
And Mr. Chairman, I would like to pull item B2 for a separate vote.
For separate discussion?
Yeah, discussion.
Okay, thank you.
Not that I have a problem with it. I just like to have more of an explanation.
I'll move the balance of the consent calendar.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So ordered. Item B2.
Good morning, Chairman Simon, members of the board. Keith Boggs again, Deputy Executive Officer, Chief Executive Office. The agricultural lease agreement before you this morning is for county-owned lands at the former Crow's Landing Air Facility in West Stanislaus County. As you know, the county took title or ownership of 1,354 of these acres, total 1,520 total acres in October of 2004. At that time of transfer, we in essence inherited a pre-existing agricultural lease that had been agreed by and between NASA, the former owner, and Michelin Farms. That agreement expired at the end of calendar year 2005. In September of 2005, staff issued an RFP for a new 3-year agricultural lease of these same acres, approximately 1,112 total acres. 3 bids were received in an open bid process, the high bid coming from the Pride of San Juan, a farming operation out of Hollister, California. The 3 bids were $279,000 from Pride of San Juan, $151,000 from Moonshine Dairy, and $139,000 from Michelina Farms, the prior tenant. In October of 2005, the board approved the high bid with Pride of San Juan, and as we moved to final the agreement with the high bidder, we were informed by County Ag Commissioner staff that a plant back restriction would be in effect for up to 704 of these acres at varying plant back dates due to past pesticide and herbicide uses by former tenant. We have calculated the plant back by dividing the winning bid amount by total agricultural acres, then by taking that per acre rate and dividing by 365 days to identify a daily lease rate, approximately 68 cents per day. In the staff report, you'll find a spreadsheet that tracks those plant back dates and identifies the year one only lease adjustment. That year one lease adjustment is $40,792. And again, this is for year one only. In addition to the plant back requirement, the high bidder, Pride of San Juan, has requested that they provide the necessary spray upkeep keep the weed abatement on the property perimeter and roadways. Theirs is a quasi-organic operation, and they have a high sensitivity to spraying practices. After discussing the cost that would be incurred by having County Public Works do the necessary spraying biannually, we found that cost would be approximately $6,800 to perform per County Public Works director. That is the weed abatement credit that we are recommending in this staff report. The total year one lease adjustment equates to a total lease rate of $231,520. As a side note, this is an increase of $130,000 plus over current or last lease rate, and $80,000 plus higher than the next eligible bidder. This includes the plant back credit and the weed abatement credit. This is the year one plant back adjustment and the annual spray credit that we are recommending in this lease adjustment this morning. The total agricultural lease will result in a $781,590 total ag lease revenue over the three-year period. Questions?
Supervisor DeMartini.
Mr. Chairman, the only reason I pulled this item is I felt that the public deserves an explanation of a reduction in about $40,800 in rent for the plant back restrictions. I'm in agriculture myself, and I know that when you spray certain, especially herbicides, on ground, you can't plant certain crops within so many days because of damage to the root system. And this is what we encountered with the air base that really wasn't anticipated. I just felt the public deserved an explanation for the reduction in rent and that it not go on the consent agenda item without comment by the staff.
Okay, thank you very much. We then need a motion.
I will move that we accept the lease adjustment.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So ordered. Thank you, Keith. Next item is item six, approval of purchase to acquire right of way. No, I'm sorry. Item nine, approval to authorize registrar of voters.
As Ms. Lundgren approaches the podium, I would like to indicate that we will be requesting that you remove item C6 from this week's agenda. We'll reschedule it at a later time.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning to the board, to Chairman Simon. Congratulations to other board members. I'm Lee Lundergan, Stanislaus County Clerk, Recorder, and Registrar of Voters. Today I bring before you a request to accept a grant from the Help America Vote Act. Help America Vote Act is a law that was put into place in 2002 and became finalized in 2006 on January 1st. It comes with funding from the federal government to implement many of the new regulations and requirements that it requires counties and voting to accept and take place. In Stanislaus County, we have been fortunate to have already received and accepted and spent three grants from the Help America Vote Act. The first grant was to buy voting equipment, and it was in the same dollar amount as the current grant that's being offered to us, $2,438,000 plus. The second grant that we received was a grant in the amount of $175,000, and that was basically a voter outreach grant, and it had to be spent in a very short period of time, like a six-week period of time prior to the election a year ago. The third grant is to aid our voters with disabilities, and it's in the amount of $41,000, which we have until 2007 to spend. And we are judiciously spending it as we need to upgrade those things for voters who have disabilities. This fourth grant is kind of a catch-all grant. It's part of Help America Vote Act Section 301. And basically, it allows for various spending for those counties who did not receive the full first grant and allows you to go into some additional things. Let me explain.
The first grant that we got that we brought our voting equipment with was only given to counties who were having a buyout on their their punch card voting systems. Because we had a punch card voting system and used it during that period of time that was noted in the Help America Vote Act, we were able to obtain that first grant and use most of it to buy the voting equipment that we have today. Because of that, not all counties had touch, or I keep seeing touchscreen, not all counties had punch card systems, and they weren't all able to obtain that first grant. This grant will allow for certain things. It will allow for the purchase of voting equipment, and it will also allow for some things that we would like to use it for. And I'll go over this just really briefly. Our primary use, although we would like to keep it open to all potential uses in the grant, would be for outreach and voter education for our residents, poll worker training more in depth, lease and purchase of approved voting systems, components, and modifications. Those would be the primary things that we'd like to use this for. The grant is in the amount, again, of over $2.4 million. It would bring the total aggregate of all four HAVA grants to over $5 million for Stanislaus County. Just to touch on another area, because of the money that has been made available to counties and to states through the Help America Vote Act by the federal government, we are seeing a great deal of individual companies get into the voting equipment business who had never been in the voting equipment business before. Some of those companies are already out of business. Some of them are kind of fighting it out on a level way above us, the titans, I might say. And as part of that, I have brought a memo before the board. Has that been given to them? And I just would like to use this opportunity to straighten out a couple things in the event that you are asked any questions about our voting system. On December 24th, there was an article in our local paper that indicated voting device repair a must. It indicated Stanislaus County was involved in that and indicated our name in the first paragraph. In reality, there is no need for any type of repair to our voting system. Our voting system is the only certified system acceptable both federally and by the state of California. And Stanislaus County is one of only three counties in the state of California to have met the January 1, 2006 deadline to be in compliance with the Help America Vote Act with regard to our voting system. We join Sacramento and Contra Costa counties in our the fact that we not only purchased this equipment, but that we have it on site and it has been accepted. We accept the last part of our equipment in December, just before the deadline, and we are readying it for use in the June election. So what I have put together in the memo to you is a variety of articles and information that kind of explain what's taking place, have any at all effect, result, et cetera, on Stanislaus County's voting equipment. Did you have any questions?
Okay, any questions by board members? I guess not. They must have done a good job. Thank you, Lee. This will require action on the board's part, so we need a motion.
I'll make that motion.
Also move. Second.
Motion and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So ordered.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, we're going to remove item six and then turn to item D1, Ron Freitas.
Good morning, Chairman Simon. Congratulations on your election.
Thank you.
And Supervisor Grover, terrific year.
Thank you.
This is an item with respect to approval of a memorandum of understanding with the Modesto Irrigation District, and Stanislaus County. As we all know, water is essential to our life.
Right under your chin.
Please.
Okay.
Please put the power. As we all know, water is essential to our life and our way of life here in Stanislaus County. And many years ago, two irrigation districts were formed that provided water that helped develop Stanislaus County and its agricultural uses. You're scaring me.
No, the screen's moved over.
Okay. Thank you. And one of the things that this area has found is that the wise use and management of its resources, both surface water and groundwater, has been a key component in making Stanislaus County one of the most foremost agricultural production and processing areas in the world. Recently, the Modesto Irrigation District has seen tremendous amount of growth that has reduced the number of its irrigated acres while increasing demands for municipal and industrial uses. And in fact, the Modesto Irrigation District and the City of Modesto have had a long and enjoy a long working relationship in that they provide domestic water to the City of Modesto for a conjunctive use. Given the situation with respect to water, staff between MID and the county have been having some discussions with respect to MID being able to provide groundwater or surface water to people within the unincorporated portions of the county. And what we decided before we began any kind of and went any further was that we would have a memorandum of understanding so that any kind of negotiations, any kind of discussions would have both the information out in public and be done in the light of day, and would have information to both governing bodies, your board and the board of directors of the MID. To that end, we have prepared a memorandum of understanding which would allow us to discuss and continue negotiations or discussions with respect to providing any kind of surface water. In there, we would look at water in good and bad years, meet stricter water quality requirements. Conjunctive use may be a good approach, but we would, and these are some of the reasons that we have for this MOU. The MOU, we agree to begin exploring the need and the feasibility of providing domestic water. It takes the first step in a long process of exploration. It starts with determining the demand for water and applies to the unincorporated parts of the county that are within the MID district boundaries. And I'll also cover what it doesn't do. I think there's been some misinformation or misunderstanding as to what people think this MOU would do. It does not provide any water, does not serve a particular area, it does not build facilities, it does not choose a treatment technology, it does not commit funding capital improvements or spending much money, it does not guarantee any particular outcome. This is just a beginning to allow us to begin to talk and discuss. With that, I'll end my presentation, ask if you have any questions, and the recommendation is you approve the memorandum of understanding and authorize the chair to sign the memorandum.
Any questions from board members?
I don't have a question, Mr. Chairman, but what I do have is that I'm glad that Mr. Freitas said what the MOU doesn't do, as opposed to what was reported in the paper. It looked like what we're going to do. So it was two different things. So that kind of clears the air for me a little bit on what it doesn't do.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I do have some comments. Really stems from the editorial that came in Sunday's paper, and I thought it was very interesting. Basically draw the conclusion that if we find surface water for Salida, that's going to open up the entire county, all the unincorporated areas, and for growth. And I thought that was a very strange conclusion to make. We all know that there's a bunch of hurdles that we're going to have to overcome if Salida were to grow. And finding water, long-term solution for water is one of them. I'm willing to bet that they probably can find enough well sites in Salida to get through the approvals, to satisfy the state and satisfy the county. But is that really the best long-term solution? We see what well water is doing in the city of Modesto and saying, what is the best long-term solution? And surface water really is the key. If we don't allocate where this water that MID has is going, it's going to be taken away from us and shipped either to San Francisco or down to L.A. And I'm kind of mindset to keep our water local. I think it very important what we laid out today is that all we're doing is starting the conversation, and we're going to have a conversation in public to say, hey, public, we're going to work with MID, hopefully, to find some sort of long-term solution for Salida. And we're going to do that in open session, open public.
Any other comments?
Mr. Chair, if I may, just two. One is that to follow along the light, this is just the beginning of the discussion. On the 25th of January, we're going to hold a water summit down at the Ag Center. And we've invited all 14 water districts that are in our county and all 9 cities and the county to participate and ask each of the water districts to explain to the community what their stand is on treated water and what their interpretation of the laws are, because we're finding that there is a pretty wide range of interpretations on what can and can't be done. The second thing is this in no way, in my opinion, precludes us from continuing to support our number one industry in Stanislaus County of agriculture. I think there's been a lot of discussion on when houses are built on ag land, the water use is the same. But this isn't prejudice anything in my mind that we now want to have houses instead of ag land. We still want to preserve the water, as Supervisor O'Brien spoke about, to promote our number one industry of agriculture. So, thank you.
I'd like to make a comment. Since no one asked me about it prior to the writing of the article, there was no opportunity for me to comment. I want all the cards on the table and all the elements of discussion, whatever took place previous to this, to be known, certainly because it was no secret to it. I have coffee every morning with one of the MID directors, Paul Warda, and one morning last year I asked him what happens to all the water that we don't use, either for irrigation or for providing water to the city of Modesto. And he said, well, this water gets shipped to some other area of the state, because there's you cannot have a surplus, apparently, in terms of how many gallons we're using and how many gallons surplus you have. So I said, well, don't you think we ought to describe this more in detail to the county, because the planning department is considering a water summit, and could you possibly have this discussion with Supervisor Grover, who's the chair of the board, and obviously would need to be aware of this. So sometime, I don't remember the exact date, during last year, we had a lunch with two MID board members and asked them to describe to us the issue of surplus water. That's Supervisor Grover and myself. At that time, we indicated that we would be interested in having them make presentations to the staff, and that the staff ought to get together with them for that purpose. We also indicated to them that we didn't think that ought to take place before they had their agreements and contracts worked out with the city of Modesto, because we didn't want this to be something that could be interpreted as an invasion of the contract or trying to draw surplus water away from them or for any other reason other than the fact, as Supervisor Grover expressed, we have a responsibility to determine the water supply for unincorporated areas. So that matter was dropped after those conversations. It was never taken up again, and it went from their staff to our staff, where they began meeting in order to determine how they could best make presentations at an overall water meeting. So that's the sum and substance of the county's contact with MID, and so that there's no question that can arise in the future that we had some secret meeting at which we made a determination that we were going to provide Salida, where we were going to build the plant, or all the things that are mentioned here that had no bearing on it. It had only a bearing on the issue of discussing an overall water plan that could be done in public through our county staff. So hopefully that clears up issues that could be talked about, that we had some kind of secret agreement.
I would also like to add one additional comment, if I may. One of the board priorities is to develop a well-planned infrastructure in the unincorporated parts of the county. The goals under that do include an analysis of water available to meet the needs in the communities throughout the unincorporated county. And that evaluation necessarily must include both surface water and groundwater. The well-planned infrastructure is not limited to domestic water, however, as it includes both identifying and defining alternative sewer systems and stormwater collection systems for that same segment of the community. So this is consistent with the vision that this board has had, and all we've done is taken the concept and expanded it to look more globally at what we believe is an emerging and growing need in our community for domestic water.
Mr. Chairman, if I could make a comment, please. There are several cities within the county that are suffering from deteriorating water quality. At the same time, the state and federal government has stricter standards. The need for reliable water supplies for domestic use is really essential, and it's time that this be addressed. The surface water discussions are not a new item. You know, Modesto's had this for years. Surface water is being discussed by the TID for Ceres, Houston, and Turlock, although I feel Modesto Irrigation District would probably do it better, but that's another matter. Patterson and Newman, cities in my district, are trying to secure surface water supplies. Newman from the CCID, and Patterson, I believe, from the Delta Mendota. There is a possibility that we might be able to tap onto that from Patterson system over to the Crow's Landing Naval Air Base. So this is something that's very important, and it's very timely, and it's certainly not a secret or anything very new. The only concern that I have is not really a big one, that agriculture is protected and it gets its fair share of water. As agricultural land has gone out of production through the years, I feel it's fine to use this water for domestic use. We either use it or lose it, and if we don't use it in Stanislaus County, Metropolitan Water District or some other district is going to steal it from us, and we need to keep it here because we have a need for it here. As long as agriculture gets the amount of water that it needs, I certainly have no problem with using it for domestic use, because this is a reliable source of water for our residents, of clean water, and that is something that we should go forward in the looking at.
Okay, thank you. We have any other comments on this? Anyone in the audience wish to comment on it? Wayne?
Thank you, Board Chairman, and good morning, Supervisors. My name is Wayne Zipser. I'm the Executive Manager of Stanislaus County Farm Bureau. And I'm here today not to oppose the MOU. I think it is a very important discussion that needs to happen in this community. The only thing that I ask is that we involve the agricultural community in this discussion, and that they're allowed to be a part of this. Always remember that what may be a much abundant resource on the east side of the river is a much scarce resource on the west side of the river. The western edge of our county and our community, the agricultural and farmers in that part of our county, rarely have 100% of their allocated water given to them through the state and federal water projects. You know, through the CalFed process, there are three components. One is environmental, the second is urban use, and what's left over is given to agriculture. So I just want to make sure that we move cautiously and and involve agriculture in the discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Wayne. I'm sure you'll find that Ron will be involving agriculture in any discussions.
May I say something? Mm-hmm. I think that on this board, Wayne, that there is two farmers, and I would welcome you and any part of the agriculture community to be there at that meeting. But I think that Supervisor DeMartini and myself will be looking at this in a way that would protect agriculture.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments? If not, we need a motion to approve the MOU.
Also move.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So ordered.
Thank you.
Next item, correspondence.
This board has received a letter of resignation from the Health Services Agency Managing Director, Margaret Zabaniak, effective February 3rd, 2006.
Okay, this, we accept the resignation with a great deal of regret. Margaret has done a superb job in managing a very, very difficult situation and a very difficult job, so we're going to miss her.
This board has received a letter from the Governor's Office of Emergency Services regarding the U.S. Small Business Administration's disaster designation for the county of San Joaquin and the contiguous counties of Alameda, Amador, Calaveras, Contra Costa, Sacramento, and Stanislaus due to agricultural losses caused by the excessive rain that occurred March 1st through March 31st, 2005.
We refer this to the Office of Emergency Services, the Ag Commissioner, Sealer of Weights and Measures, and Stanislaus Economic Development Workforce Alliance.
This board has received a letter from the California Fish and Game Commission and the Board of Forestry and Fire Protection requesting information regarding the protection of oak woodlands in Stanislaus County.
Refer to the Planning Department of Planning and Community Development.
This board has received a letter from Mid Valley Water Ski Club regarding exclusive use of the Modesto Reservoir ski site.
Refer this to the Chief Executive Officer, County Council, and Department of Parks and Recreation.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
We acknowledge receipt of these claims and refer them to the Chief Executive Officer, Risk Management Division. Next item on the board is the our Board of Supervisors reports. Do we have any reports from any board member?
I didn't push the button, but I'll get.
Well, you don't have to because it isn't working.
I'll get used to that, right? Okay. I just want to clear up something that before we adjourn for the holidays, a person came in and talked about the appointment of people to the different fire departments and how it was actually aimed at what I had done. So we might as well clear it up right now. One of the on the rural fire department in Turlock, there's been people there that's been over the limit of what the memo that I received talked about as how long a person can serve on any board or any fire department or any MAC or anything like that. So I hope that today I will clear that up. I hope so. The reason I appointed the person that was there was the fact that as long as everybody's happy, I don't see why there should be a big wave caused. Now, maybe some of you may disagree, but I hope not. But I'm willing to do anything that everybody else on this board will do. If we're going to go with the two-term limit, I will go the two-term limits on everything we talk about. So and if that's the will of the board, then I would expect everybody else on the board to do the same thing I'm willing to do. So if we want to do it that way, that's fine. If we don't, that's fine. But I do have the authority to continue on. If the county council can tell me if I'm wrong, that it doesn't necessarily mean I have to do it, but or anybody else on this board has to just go to a two-term limit. But now I'm sure he's going to tell me one way or the other, right?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members of the board, this board adopted a resolution a number of years ago that generally provides for boards and commissions a two-term limitation. However, the board also adopted at that same time an exception. indicating that the board could, if they chose to do so, allow individuals to stay beyond that two-year term. And the reasons, if I recall, that were stated at the time is that because sometimes in some areas it is difficult to find individuals that are willing to serve in that capacity and provide their service and time at no compensation on these very critical and very important boards. So the board did put that exception. So in answer to your question, Supervisor Mayfield, this board has had a policy, and the policy continues in effect to date, that would allow individuals to serve beyond the two terms if the board so chooses to do so.
One of the reasons that I brought it up, of course, was I've forgotten what the law really read. I wanted it reaffirmed to the board as to what the policy was, and when I read it, I realized that at that time we did make that exception to allow someone to override it in terms of experience and for what other reasons. So I don't have any problem with it. I just want to make sure the board understood thoroughly what those conditions were, and generally hope that in the major areas of planning, what are the other?
That's about the
any major commission that we can that we look really carefully about allowing someone to serve more than two terms, and so with the other areas, I don't have a problem with it. Okay. So,
but
you are allowed to do that. So.
Yeah, but with the major like the planning commission,
right?
I would not go over the two terms. No,
I wouldn't either.
Like the other ones, I'm having one heck of a time trying to get people to serve on the max and everything else that we appoint people to. But like I say, if we all want to be consistent, I'll do it tomorrow. The letter will go out. If we all want to be consistent and we want to go to a two-term limit, I'm more than willing to do that if everybody would agree to this.
Well, I don't think we have any problem with it. So.
Okay.
I'm very comfortable leaving the policy the way it is and leaving it to the discretion of the supervisor. The policy is there. You can use it if you want to take the person out of office and
right.
say, hey, look, we got a policy. And
right.
If you want to overrule it, then we have okay. options. I'm
Thank
fine
you.
With it.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with it either. I've had to appoint somebody for longer than two terms, and we don't have people standing in line for some of these commissions. It's very hard to fill some of these positions and drainage boards and municipal advisory councils and community services districts. So
exactly.
I don't see this as a problem at all.
Well,
sometimes if we didn't allow more than two terms, we would have a vacancy.
We wouldn't have anybody
nobody
serving.
In it.
No, but Supervisor Martin, I wouldn't do that. I'm looking at the ones I have a tough time doing it. Okay.
Yeah, so am I, and I've had to do the same thing, so I don't see anything wrong with it.
I have a comment under the board report. It's going to be my responsibility soon to give a state of the county address, and I'm going to have the we're working on it now, and I'm going to have it sent to you in advance so that you can look it over. And I want to make sure that if you have any comments with regards to what you consider the items that we should be working on in the future to resolve, that you include some comments attached to it and send it back to me so that I can make sure that it fully addresses all the concerns of the board. So that'll be coming to you soon.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, if I could make one comment. Some time ago we were looking into a system, software system would track complaints for departments and keep track of the days, and there was a company that offered to allow us to use their system for, I don't know, 2-3 months at no charge. And I don't know where this is. I haven't heard anything about it for a while. You know, a couple of years ago, the grand jury wrote a report about the Ag Department, and their complaint was that the department had no way of tracking complaints, and they had lost sight of some of them. And this was a possible solution that we're company had was going to let us use for nothing, but I don't know whatever happened to it.
John?
Tony Emerson, Chief Information Officer. We're progressing with this situation quite consistently. There are a number of processes to go through. The two parts of the process we've really got to finish are that we've got a number of departments that have their own systems, and of course this is only going to work if we can run it across the whole county. So we're trying to figure out how to get the data from these individual systems. There's about five departments involved into this major system. The second one is we've still got a couple of items to finish off in the contract negotiation process. But after we've gone through this, I think we're in pretty good shape.
Weren't they going to allow us to use their system for a few months?
That's right. What we've negotiated is that we get 90 days free trial, and at the end of that time, we make a decision whether to keep it or not. But what we've been trying to do with County Council and throughout this process is to make sure that at the end of the 90 days, if we decide to keep it, we don't have to start things all over again, that we can just continue to use it. So it's seamless. I'm sure we don't want to have to re-enter, you know, issues that we're dealing with at the time at the end of 90 days.
So what? How much time are you looking for before you can start using the system?
It's, I think, late January, early February is when we're tentatively scheduled at this point. But I can come back to the board on that when it's firmed up.
Okay.
Thank you, John.
You're welcome.
Any further questions? Okay. Legislative fiscal management report.
Yes, I do have a couple items to share with you today. The first is just to inform you that Margaret Sapaniak, our soon-to-be departing HSA managing director, is in Sacramento today testifying on Stanislaus County's behalf on AB 959, a former bill that would provide for reimbursement under the Certified Public Expenditures Program for Stanislaus County, and would definitely improve our overall financial position in our clinic system. Secondly, Larry Haw and I, as well as David Jones, have a trip planned tomorrow, I believe, to Sacramento, where we'll be testifying on Senate Bill 9, a denim bill, which would freeze the negative bailout. This is going to be an uphill battle, as this issue has gone all the way to the governor's desk in the past and been vetoed. But we're going to take a very aggressive approach this year and see if we can move it forward as smoothly as possible. Finally, I want to acknowledge the work Gary Henshaw and Dr. John Walker have been doing on our avian influenza program, let you know that it is moving forward, that we are developing a response plan. We have a surge capacity planning session scheduled for later this month to discuss our ability in the event of a pandemic outbreak to handle the increased inpatient demand that would occur throughout our communities.
Okay, thank you very much. We have one announcement. Tomorrow we have a secret tour of Modesto Irrigation District facilities. Undercover? No, it's perfectly public. Hope everybody understands this is a joke. We leave tomorrow, Wednesday, January 11th, from at 1010 10th Street. Actually, it's not, we don't leave from here. We leave from somewhere across from the MID building, 8:30 in the morning, and we're returning at 2:15 in the afternoon. This meeting is then adjourned, and I'll turn to the County Council. We have a closed session.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, a closed session is regarding conference with legal counsel. Anticipated litigation facts have arisen. See, anticipate no announcement.
Thank you. This meeting is then adjourned to the executive session.